Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Linda, and this is Soul in the City, where we inspire to take your life higher and higher in the spirit. Today will be a great day. It's Sunday. Let's relax. Let's kick back. And I have an exciting guest for you today, and we'll be talking about an awesome topic. And so I just want you to take a deep breath for me. If you're like me, I have had a Sunday where, you know, it has been one of those Sundays. So it's easy, and it's almost a welcoming thing for me to take a deep breath. Take a deep breath with me. God is good, and I'm great, and so are you. And he lives inside of us. That makes us powerful beyond measure. And everything he is, we are, and we have it all inside of us. So let's pull out all of those things. Most of all, let's open up our ears to receive a message and some words of inspiration to take you and to inspire you higher and higher this week. I have a phenomenal guest, and we're going to be talking about audacious, owning your own life. So we'll listen to a little bit of Kirk Franklin, and then we're going to turn it over, and I'm going to talk about talk with Dr. Allard, and I'll introduce him in a minute. So in the meantime, like I said, take a deep breath and know that because God is, you are. We'll take another one of those deep breaths as I'm listening to Kirk Franklin. It's all good. Life is all good. It's all in what you make it. And I never knew I could be so happy. I just wanted you to hear a little bit of Kirk, and it's going to be a brighter day. I'm going to introduce my guest. Hello, Alan. Dr. Allard, how are you?
Hi, Linda. I am doing great, and please call me Alan.
Okay, Alan. Well, let me just do a brief bio so that the guest and, I mean, the listening audience knows a little bit about you. Dr. Allard is a former psychotherapist and has a master's degree and a PhD in counseling. He is a professional speaker and has trained and coached employees from organizations such as the American Red Cross, the Herschel Hotel, the FBI, McDonald's, Motorola, and others. Allen has been quoted in the New York Times, the New York Post, the California Executive, and People magazine. He is a frequent blogger and guest coach on a preeminent career and personal development website for women. He is just the all-in-all man of today. So welcome, Alan.
Thank you.
Very impressive bio.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Love the way that you presented it.
Good,
so where
good.
Shall we start, Linda? Do you want me just to jump in here?
I just want you, we are so free on this program. I just want you to jump on in, and that's kind of how we do it. And when I have questions, I'll ask you some, but I know you have okay. something great for the audience. So you just jump right on in.
Okay. You know, this topic actually came about after I did a show with you several months ago. And you were asking me, well, what would you want to talk on? And this just popped in my mind, the idea of being audacious and how to own your life and make it happen. And I think that that's a topic that most of us would resonate with because we all have a desire inside somewhere to be more and to have more and just to experience more in life. Doesn't matter how good our life is. Doesn't matter what successes we've had. We want more because that is just the way we're made. Life is about growth, and whether it's a seed in the ground that is seeking to grow into full development, into a tree, or whether it is a human being, the fact is we are designed, as you said, and I love what you said about being great. We're not designed to just kind of walk leisurely through life, there's nothing wrong with walking leisurely if you're over time, but that gets boring after time. You want to run and you want to sprint and you want to jump up and down and dance. So we're designed actually to make a difference. We're designed to be heard, to have a voice that people want to stop and listen to. We're designed to make an impact in this world. One of my past mentors, Dr. Alan Weiss, said that we were not designed just to put our toes in the water. We were designed to make waves. And I think he's exactly right about that. So somewhere deep down inside of everyone, they know that that's what they're meant for. And if you listen to the universe and to that voice inside of you, that's exactly what you're going to hear. And I'm going to do something I don't normally do. I'm going to read a quote, and it's probably one that everyone's heard before, but every time I read it, it just says something different to me. This is that famous quote by Marianne Williams that Nelson Mandela quoted in one of his speeches. And here's what she said about being audacious, about making an impact. She said, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us. And we ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us, and it's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence actually liberates others." And I love that quote, especially she ends it. Yeah, because sometimes we subconsciously hold back. We're not really ourselves because we are afraid of that, you know, it might inhibit someone else. And she says just the opposite. No, it gives them permission to be themselves too. So this is all about knowing who you are and being who you are in full living color and in surround sound. And, yes, people are going to take note of that. People are going to stop. They're going to look. They're going to listen. And that's good because everyone has something inside of them to share with the world. I want to give a couple of examples of being audacious, and I'm going to explain what audacious means, what living an audacious life means. Well, let me just do that now so that you'll understand these stories.
Right.
A little
when
bit.
You said that, I knew what the word meant, but I looked it up in as far as owning your life. And when I looked it up and looked at it from that point of view, it was awesome. So please share that with the audience.
Yeah, you know, I had to look it up too. It was one of those words that I said, oh, that's a cool word, but what does it actually mean? So I came across a variety of descriptions, and let me share them with you. Audacious means to be bold or daring, fearless, original, without restriction to previous ideas, lively, unrestrained by convention or propriety, disposed to taking risks, willing to seek out and undertake new and daring adventures. And then this last one that I love, it means spirited and original.
Wow.
And it doesn't matter how someone is feeling that might be listening to this. You know, sometimes we go through things in life and it's part of our growth, but at the time, it doesn't feel like we're growing. It feels like, you know, we've had the life beaten out of us. We don't feel spirited and original, but we are. The fact is that we are more than what we could ever possibly think we are, and certainly more than other people think we are, much more than that. So being audacious is being bold. It's about getting rid of those previous ideas and taking on new ones and taking some risks. Now, being audacious isn't about being arrogant. And a lot of people think it is. It's not about being egotistical or rude or narcissistic or being, you know, some crazy, weird person that just kind of drives people away, repels everyone around them. But it's about being your true self, what I call your powerful self, and believing in yourself, knowing your worth, and knowing what you want in life, asking for it, and then doing something about it, taking action. It involves all of those things. So that's what audacious is. And when I talk about owning your world, that means a lot of things, but it certainly means loving yourself on a very deep level, accepting yourself, having a very clear vision for your life, which includes your career, your relationships, your health, having a very clear vision for what motivates you, and knowing that you deserve all that. Knowing you deserve what you want. Yes. And then progressively reaching new goals. Go ahead.
A lot of people just don't, and me, and I've had that in my life where you just kind of don't own who you really are. I don't know, like you said earlier, just the fact of playing small, like you described with the quote. And I think that a lot of people, we know we're powerful in our own right, but it's in the shadows of other people we play small.
Yeah, isn't that crazy from one standpoint, but from another standpoint it's very understandable. And I'm going to talk in a few minutes about what keeps us from being audacious, and then we're going to spend most of the time on how to let that audaciousness out. But yeah, you're right. We do at times play small. And we play, instead of playing to win in life, we play not to lose. You've heard that phrase before, playing to win, not
right.
Playing not to lose. Big difference in mindset. So let me give you a couple of examples of people. I came across, now you're a minister, right, Linda? I know you're
right.
An RN, but you're also, you have a Master's of Divinity, and so you're a minister. Everyone has their idea of what a minister is like. And I came across this website. I read about this guy. I think I came across him in Huffington Post. And get this, the name that he goes by for his brand, so to speak, is Whiskey Preacher.
Wow.
Whiskey Preacher. Now, who would have ever thought about that? So I go to his website, and I see this guy who has tattoos on his arms and tattoos on his chest, and he's got these two big piercings in his ear. And I'm reading, and he says, and he's a Disciples of Christ Christian church minister, and he says, I am a tattooed, cigar-smoking, whiskey-drinking preacher who curses at times. And he does curse. I watched a couple of the videos, and he's using language that you would never hear a minister use, so to speak. Now, here's the incredible thing. This guy is being himself.
And you know what? As you describe him, I like him. I like real people like that. And you're telling me, and I'm like, where is he?
Yeah, go whiskeypreacher.com. Go look him up because, you know, it's just a crazy thing. But he's being himself. Now, does everyone like him? Oh, I can tell you right now that probably a lot of religious people don't like him. Because, of course, he's, you know, a minister or a Christian is not supposed to curse, and they're not supposed to be talking about drinking whiskey and whatnot. But he is very successful in what he does. He, you know, has a variety of successes. He graduated. He got a Master's of Divinity from Baylor University, from their divinity school, and he has lectured to their Doctor of Ministry students this year and last year. So obviously, you know, he's building a community. He's having some success. But I guarantee you there are a lot of people who wouldn't like him. He's also inclusive of the gay and lesbian community, and he's very vocal about that. So, of course, a lot of people would not share that view that comes from even his own denomination. But my point is, here is someone who is being audacious, but what he's really doing is he has loved himself enough and he has owned who he is enough just to come out to the world and say, hey, this is me, you know, love me or hate me. I'm not going to change this because I'm not going to pretend to be someone for you that I'm not. So I think he was a great example of being audacious. Now, here's another example.
So
yeah. All right, so this one is much different and may seem a little bit tame, but I think it is still an incredible story of being audacious. There is a young woman, she's 29, her name is Dana Lerma, and she had dreamed for a long time about being a nurse, so she worked hard in high school, graduated from a pretty tough school at 4.0 in high school. And she applied for the University of Illinois. That was the only place that she wanted to go. She lived in Chicago and didn't make it in. She did not get in, even with her stellar record, and she was involved in all kind of extracurricular activities. So that was a devastation to her. Now, to you or me, you know, particularly at our ages, we may say, well, that's, you know, not that big of a deal. But to her at that time in life, that mm-hmm. was a big blow to her. So she had also applied to one other school, Loyola in Chicago, where she was accepted. She went to Loyola, made straight A's there. And she said, my dream job is to be a nurse in the pediatric intensive care for Children's Memorial Hospital. And everyone, her teachers, her peers, everyone told her, that's crazy, Dana. You'll never start out at Children's Memorial in the pediatric intensive care unit because they never hire new nurses. Well, she didn't listen to them. She went on the interview, which was amazing that she got. And she was just herself, and she got the job offer. So now she is a nurse practitioner. She just finished her master's degree a few months ago and is working at the same hospital. Even though she commutes, it takes her an hour and a half to get there, 2 hours to get home. She could work a lot closer to home, but she is doing what she wants to do. She is living her dream life, and she absolutely loves what she does. So being audacious means not giving up, not listening to other people who tell you you can't do something. If you really go for it and don't get it, hey, that's fine. You're going to learn a lot of things. But she went after what she wanted. She believed in herself enough, and she got what she wanted. And if you talk with her, you know that she absolutely loves what she does. So that was another example. Now, I could go on and give some other examples, and I might as we go on, but two examples of people saying, I know what I want. I believe that I can get it. I'm going to take some risk. And despite everyone telling me that I can't have it, I am going to do it. So I just want to ask everyone that might be listening to this now or later to stop and think a minute and ask yourself, how has your life turned out so far? If you could travel back in time 10 or 20 years, and 10 or 20 years ago, if you had the ability to guarantee how your life would be today, just by imagining it back then, what you wanted, would there be a gap between what you would have imagined and what you now have? And if there's a gap, how big is that gap? Mm-hmm. We know we can't change the last 10 or 20 years, and there might be some people listening that got kind of bummed out by that question, thinking, why did he have to ask that question? Because my life isn't what I want it to be. You know, boy, I had these big dreams back then, and now I'm just kind of thinking, you know, I've got to just roll with what I have and settle for what I have. But I really want people to stop and think. 10 or 20 years ago, what were they dreaming? What were they thinking might be possible? And have they given up on that? Because if they have, I want to challenge them to rethink it. And if they want to have the life that they really wanted back then it begins with owning your life now. And that means to take responsibility for your thoughts and emotions and choices. And even the emotions that you don't want, the emotions that make you feel pretty terrible. It means saying, okay, these are my feelings. I'm going to explore them. I'm going to do something with them that's going to get me to where I want to be. So owning our lives means taking responsibility even for how we're feeling at the moment, taking responsibility for our behaviors in the here and now, and creating the life that we want, a life that can be filled with happiness and love and health and connection, fulfillment, meaning, and even financial prosperity. Mm. So I want everyone just to be thinking, you know, where 10 or 20 years ago did they imagine they would be now? What kind of a gap is there? And are they wanting to close that gap? So let's talk about what keeps people from being more audacious and going for what they want and actually getting more of what they want. Now, we're going to talk about God. We're going to talk about spirit, the universe, whatever people won a term that incredible energy that just infuses the universe. And we'll get to that in just a minute because I think that's an important piece. And I'm saying that because sometimes people think that God really doesn't care. I mean,
especially when you haven't gotten what you wanted out of life. You really think,
exactly. Well,
he doesn't care about me. I haven't gotten it. When you see other people getting things that they want, you can't get there where you question.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's understandable. You know, if you were, you know, 8 or 9 years old and you started asking your parents for something for Christmas, and every single year at age 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, you don't get it. At some point, isn't that child going to start thinking, well, my parents really don't care if I have that or not?
Yeah.
So we do that with the universe. We do that with God, with Spirit. We make this assumption because we haven't gotten what we want, then that must mean that God doesn't think that it's important. And then we wrestle with things like, well, you know, for you and I, we're here in the United States, and we think, okay, I live in one of the richest countries in the world with all of the wonderful things, and why should God be concerned about me wanting what I want and getting what I want when there are people that don't even have clean water to drink or food to eat? So we have to deal with all of those things. So let's talk about, in general, what are the barriers to being audacious and owning our life and making it happen. And it means whatever it is that we are wanting. And I'm just going to paint a broad picture here and say that our past conditioning and our ongoing conditioning is almost always a barrier to people who are not getting what they want. In other words, whatever is in their subconscious mind that got put in there from before their brain was even developed, when they were listening to their parents, when they were watching TV, going to school, hearing everyone, having all of these messages, when we're a child, we can't evaluate any of those messages. We just take it in. So we develop this sense of who we are. We develop a sense of self-worth. We develop a sense of what we're good at, what we're not good at, what we deserve and what we don't deserve. And it has an impact on us. I grew up in a family where there were 5 kids. My dad was in the Air Force, and money was pretty scarce. And we didn't ask for things very much at all. We never went to eat out. I mean, we, you know, going just to get a hamburger someplace just never happened. So we just had this mentality growing up that, you know, there was not any money and that you couldn't have what you wanted. But my grandparents would come to visit, and one time when we were living in Texas, in San Antonio, we went into Mexico, and we were, you know, going in a shop, and I remember seeing this big Mexican hat and this medallion, you know, that you put around your neck. And my grandparents had said, you know, to all of the grandkids, you know, we're going to buy you something, so find what you want here in this store. So I saw these two things, and I was bold enough to go up and ask them for both the hat and that medallion. And they bought it for me, and I was so happy about that until my aunt came over, and she reprimanded me for asking for more than one thing. And she said, your grandparents don't have as much money as you think. You shouldn't have asked for more than one thing. And I just felt horrible the rest of the day. So the experiences that we have, and everyone has their own unique experiences, but in some ways we have some pretty similar experiences, they condition us to feel good about ourselves and to feel really worthy of getting what we want or not so much. So we have to deal with this barrier of what's inside our subconscious mind. You've heard the phrase, as within, so without, I'm sure many times.
Yes.
So, you know, if someone stops and thinks, well, okay, well, what does that mean? Here's just a simple application of it. I'm not saying that's all it means, but one meaning is that whatever is in your subconscious mind, that's within. Whatever is in your subconscious mind is going to be what you get on the outside, because the job of your subconscious mind is to turn your beliefs and your thoughts into your reality. So we need to really, really stop and think, what's in my subconscious mind that is keeping me from being more audacious, more bold, more fearless about really dreaming and about setting bigger goals and playing bigger and letting my powerful self inform me what I'm going to do today and how I'm going to do it. So what do we think about all day? If we worry about money, if we worry about what people think about us, worry is going to attract more things to worry about. Anger in our life is going to attract more circumstances to be angry about. Have you ever noticed that angry people seem to have one thing after another happening to them and around them for them to be angry about?
And they attract angry people to them, which kind of perpetuates the situation.
Exactly, exactly. So if we're thinking about those kind of things, then that's exactly what's going to happen. We're going to attract more and more into our life. If we're thinking about struggle, if we're thinking about lack, then those are the kind of things that we're going to see happening more and more in our life. And all the time we're thinking to ourselves, wait a minute, what's going on? I am telling myself, I'm using these affirmations, I'm thinking about wanting more health, friends, family, prosperity. You know, I read something every day, and that's what I'm thinking about. But the truth of the matter is that when we're not reading that book, when we're not around someone who shares our thinking, oftentimes we're letting our mind run on autopilot, and that autopilot is thinking about the lack and the struggle and the disappointment that we had and not getting what we want and how hard things are. So we have to be honest with ourselves. And when I say be honest with ourselves, I'm not saying to get down on ourselves, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but we have to take a look at ourselves and say, do we have more work to do? Because as within, so without. So it's a matter of working on our level of consciousness. It's a matter of working on our level of thought and what we really believe on the inside. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense, and it is so true about what we think about, we attract in our lives, and even just being audacious and taking those risks. I think sometimes when you've lived a life where, you know, you weren't really conditioned to take risks, that also can impede that, you know, where you weren't pretty much allowed to really dream that big. Maybe somebody shot those things down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm sure most of us have had people that have criticized us, that have shot our dreams down at one time or the other growing up, haven't we?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
And that can be family members or whoever, but yes.
Exactly. And family members can often be the ones that still do that. And it's not that they're meaning to shoot us down. It's not if they're meaning to hurt us or to hold us back. They may be well-intentioned, but the effect can still be the same. So what we have to do is we have to say, okay, all of that may have happened in my past. I may have grown up with these ideas of struggle and lack and not feeling real confident about myself. Now what am I going to do about it? Because we don't get what we want. We get what we are on the inside, what we really believe and what we really think. And there's a big difference between what I think. Meaning, I may think I think abundance, but under the surface, I may be thinking more of lack and struggle and difficulty. So what is it on the deeper part of ourselves that we need to do some more work in? And it's not that it's ever going to get to a perfect level, but we need to get to the level to where life is getting easier, where money is flowing more to us, where more people are showing up saying, hey, I want to be a part of your ministry, or I want to, you know, be a client in your business. And that can happen when we really believe that it's going to happen. When I hear metaphysicians talk about struggling to build their ministry or struggling in building a metaphysical business, that tells me two things. It tells me, number one, that they don't know how to market themselves.
Mm-hmm.
or it tells me that they don't really believe in the things that they think that they believe on the level that is going to provide a demonstration in their life, meaning on a level where it's really going to produce results. So most metaphysicians know more about marketing than they think that they do. The problem is they're not doing anything. They're not taking action. And the reason why they're not taking action has to do with their self-worth, their self-esteem, and their fear, and that's all interconnected. So what I'm saying is that, in general, the biggest barrier to us owning our life and being more audacious and being able to attract people into our life in terms of a business or a ministry or whatever it is that we're doing has to do with we've been conditioned to think small about ourselves, to think poorly about ourselves, rather than to feel this quiet confidence and feeling accepting and loving about ourselves. When we change that, then everything changes. Pardon?
Right. I was just thinking it seems fear can play a big part in all of that. Just the fear, I don't know, the fear of getting anything done, the fear of going for it. I think that's it, the fear of making that first step to do anything about whatever it is you choose to do.
Well, yeah, that is true. And there are three things that come out of our past conditioning that can stop us cold. And I'm gonna come back to fear because that was one of the three. One is guilt, and the other one is shame, and the other one is fear. Now, let me explain what guilt is. Guilt is when I say to myself, I did something wrong. And here's the thing. Unless someone is a psychopath, what some people call sociopath, meaning they really have no sense of remorse, when someone is carrying guilt around in their life, then what they're really telling themselves is, I deserve to be punished in some way. They're not telling themselves that consciously, but subconsciously they're believing that they deserve to be punished. And here's the tricky thing about guilt. It never ceases to amaze me how many clients that I work with when I was doing psychotherapy and now that I'm doing life coaching that are struggling with guilt and they're not aware of it. Guilt can be in a person's life, so to speak, in their subconscious mind, and they are not aware of it. So they're holding themselves back, because punishing yourself can mean struggling financially. It can mean only making so much money, because the truth of the matter is that we generally earn as much money as our self-worth allows us to earn.
That's good, and that's true, yes.
Yeah. Now, of course, someone will say, "Oh, that doesn't apply to me because, you know, I'm building this ministry, or I'm a life coach or a spiritual coach, and you know, my gifts come from God, and I just feel bad about charging people." Well, you know, Mother Teresa was a minister, wasn't she?
Yes, she was.
I don't think she ever liked for money.
Yes.
Anytime she wanted money, all she had to do was ask. As a matter of times, there were times where she turned money away. There were times where people would come to her and say, "I want to give some money to your ministry in Calcutta." And she said, "Why do you want to give money to my ministry in Calcutta? You live in Texas, and there are plenty of ministries there working with the poor. You need to take your money back home and give to your home ministries because that's where you are." I'm not saying she did that all the time, but she did it at times. So she never had to worry about money, as far as I know, from what I've read about her, because she didn't have any guilt about asking for money. Now, when we get rid of guilt, then all of a sudden things start flowing to us because we believe that we're worthy of those. People showing up in our lives, clients showing up in our lives, money showing up in our lives. So that's guilt. Now, shame. Shame is where someone says, there's something wrong with me, and I'm not deserving. They say to themselves, I am wrong. I am a mistake. They don't say, I made a mistake, or I did something wrong. They say, I am wrong. I am a mistake. And people go around thinking, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not capable enough, I'm not beautiful enough, handsome enough, I'm not brave enough. And so there's probably someone that's been listening to this and saying, well, I guess that's my problem, I'm just not audacious enough. So we can feel shame about those kind of things. And then the last thing that you mentioned is fear. And fear is really about failing or about being rejected. And, of course, that's a type of failure. And so we don't communicate our message or we don't do it with confidence because we're afraid we won't be loved or expected or accepted. We're afraid we're not going to fit in. And then we say, if that were to happen, I can't handle that. And it's usually not a conscious thing. We don't consciously think it through. But if you delve deep enough, and you don't have to delve very deep, then that's what's going on in a person's mind is, gee, if I really try to launch my business, if I really try to launch my ministry, I'm going to fail, and that will be horrible, and I can't handle that. So they stop. They don't take a step. And it devastates people.
It does.
Now, I want to say just a second, and then we're going to talk about how to be more audacious in our life. But we spend a lot of time on what some people would call negativity and negative stuff. And I hear a lot of metaphysicians and law of attraction teachers and prosperity teachers tell people to never, ever think about negative stuff. So they would, you know, not want to talk about these kind of things. And specifically, if they were coaching someone, they would tell that person, listen, we're only going to talk about prosperity. We're only going to talk about what we want. We're only going to talk about solutions here. So don't tell me about any problem you're having. Don't tell me how you feel about yourself, because then you're going to get more of that. But here's the problem with that. If we don't deal with those things, and they are real, they are inside of many people much of the time, then they repress it, they suppress it, and it's going to hold them back. So my experience has shown that if I can help someone to talk honestly about how they really feel about themselves, about their past failures or their lack of the kind of success that they had hoped for, if they talk about their guilt, although they might not name it guilt, or their shame. And we can have shame about a lot of things, can't we? We can have shame about our bodies,
yes.
About the money that we make, the car that we drive, the house we live in, our appearance. But if we can talk about that and own that and realize that it's not going to kill us, and if we can talk about it with someone who will love and accept and respect us, then we can begin to love and accept and respect ourselves, and then we're freed up to be more audacious. So we don't want to get lost in it. We don't want to dwell on it for a long period of time, and that's relative. But the point is we want to deal with it, and then we want to move on. But that's important to deal with it.
Okay, it is, and I think...
Go ahead.
Just dealing with past issues. It's just like putting it in past and then moving forward. You know, dealing with those negative things. And I think a lot of times we want to say all the positive things, but a lot of times in people's lives today, negative things happen. So it has to be put in its proper perspective in the past and move
exactly.
forward from that moment.
Yeah, exactly. And if someone is still feeling something, then it's not in the past. If someone still has a belief that they're not good enough, they're not capable enough, then obviously it's not in the past. It's right here in the present. So we need to deal with that. It doesn't have to take a long time. Even when I was a psychotherapist, I practiced what was called brief psychotherapy and goal-oriented psychotherapy. But the point is to be honest, because lying to ourselves and saying, oh, I love myself, I feel great about myself, when the fact is, you know, sometimes we get so frustrated with ourselves and so impatient with ourselves that we treat ourselves in a way that we would never treat anybody else. And that's not good.
It's not.
So the barrier is our past conditioning, It is how our subconscious has been trained to think. It's about the beliefs that we've developed about our self-worth and what we're capable of. And if we can admit that and if we can deal with it, then we have a foundation to build on. So let's talk about some specific things about how to be more audacious, meaning how to be a little more bold in our life, how to take more action, how to speak up for what we want, how to set boundaries with people, how to get out of times when we're procrastinating, because that is part of what being audacious is all about. And I do want to say that when we talk about being audacious, we're talking about a process and we're talking about a continuum. So we are always somewhere on that continuum of being bold and being more going after what we want. It's not like we're at one end or the other. We're somewhere in the continuum there. And the point is for us to make some progress, even some slow, small progress in the beginning. There's nothing wrong with that, but going in the direction of being more audacious. So what is going to help us to do that? Here are some things that are going to help us. One is to feel our connection with the universe, with God, with Spirit, to really understand and to accept that nothing can ever separate us from Spirit, from God. And the reason for that, and I know that there are a lot of religious beliefs that teach that, yes, there are things that can separate us from God, and then there are certain things that we have to do to get back in connection with God. But my beliefs are that there is nothing that can separate us from God. God is within every single human being. There is no place in the universe or the galaxies, and there are so many galaxies that we haven't discovered them all. But as far as we can go, as high as we can go, as low as we can go, that's where God is. That's where Spirit is. God is around us, and He's within us. So if someone really accepts that and realizes, hey, God, the universe, is within me, then all of a sudden they don't feel as alone as they have. They don't feel that they're having to do what they want to do on their own, and they feel accepted, because if Spirit is within me, then I must be a worthy person.
And we are.
and we are. Now, if someone looks at the Bible, Christ said, the Father and I are one. And so someone says, well, yeah, he was talking about him, you know, not me. He was the Son of God, as some people would say, in a very unique way, as opposed to all of us being the sons and daughters of God. But that same Christ said, you know something? You will do greater things than I have.
Yes,
he did. So he said both of those things. So here's the question that I would ask. How are we going to do greater things than Christ did if it's not true that every person is one with God?
Yes, he had to know. He knew that there was an interconnection, just like he had that interconnection.
Exactly. So the universe, God, is within you. When I say you, I'm talking about every single one of us. And if we understand that Spirit moves through us seeking expression, and the one way that God seeks expression through us is through our desires, through our dreams, through our hopes. So any desire, any hope that we have that is good for self and good for others is what Spirit wants and seeks expression for, and Spirit seeks that expression through the individual. So when I feel connected to God, to the universe, knowing that as I dream so that I can have this growth in my life, so that I can have these wonderful experiences, then it's good for me. It's good for other people. And why would God want anything other than that? So we need to think about, what do I really believe about God? Do I believe that God is withholding? Do I believe that God only gives me a certain amount and then he says, well, that's enough, you don't need any more, and after all, if I gave it to you, you're just going to waste it because you're kind of a selfish person, you're self-centered, and yeah, you'd give some of it, you know, to help the people in need, but what you really want is you want a nicer car and a bigger house and you want to go to Hawaii on vacation, and why should I give those kind of things to you? So that's how a lot of people envision God. But those same people would say, well, you know, that's what the Bible teaches. And yet I remember a story in the Bible where a son comes to his father and says, I want my inheritance. You're familiar with that story. I would imagine people know it as the prodigal son. And so this son comes to the father and says, I want my inheritance. And, you know, there's nothing in that story to indicate that that father reprimands that son or tells him, son, you really need to think about this because I know what intent you have and it's not good. No, the story has the father gladly giving him what he asked for. And so the son goes away, and the story says he wasted the money in a reckless kind of living. And then he comes back and he says, Father, make me your servant because I'm not even deserving to be your son. And that's how, you know, a lot of people think God is. But the story has the father, who is supposed to represent God, Spirit, saying, are you crazy? And I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, but it has the father saying, are you crazy? You're my son. I'm going to put this robe on you. I'm going to give you this ring that symbolizes that you're my son and that everything that I have is yours, and we're going to kill this fatted calf because we're going to party here because now we're back together in the same place. So there was no punishment. There was no guilt. There was no shame. So people have to figure out what kind of a God are they trying to believe in.
And that we are sons and daughters of God. I think sometimes people have a hard time. They see God as apart from themselves. And sometimes we are taught and conditioned to be that he's going to punish us. He's a good dad. And that we are his sons and daughters, which make us equal, and this is hard for some people to grasp, equal with Christ. He's our brother, our way shower.
Yeah, and that is a great example. If he is our brother, then we are equal with him. Mm-hmm. And the older brother in that story was upset, and he said, You gave my brother all this money and he wasted it, and I've been working my ass off for you all this time. I'm paraphrasing here again. He was upset. And the father said, wait a minute, son. Everything that I've had has always been yours. And here's the kicker. I think the point of that is the father was saying, hey, everything that I've had, all the wealth, all of the resources that I've had have been here for you, and they were yours as well as mine, but you never asked.
Yes.
So that son had some beliefs.
Goes back to when the Bible says you have not because you ask not, which is very profound.
Yes, it is. It is. It doesn't say you don't have because you're not worthy, but, you know, it could say, it doesn't say this exactly, but it could say you don't have because you don't think you're worthy and you didn't ask. So when we get these beliefs about not being connected to God because we're not good enough, and see, that's where that I'm not good enough is, people think, well, I'm not even good enough really to be one with God, to have the universe, to have Spirit inside of me. I'm just not worthy. And that's a terrible way to go through life. So we need to feel, and I say feel because it needs to be more than an intellectual belief. We need to feel our connection with God, with Spirit. All right, here's another thing that we can do to be more audacious in life, and that is to build our self-esteem and our self-confidence and our self-worth. And I know that those are some broad areas, but what I'm talking about is dealing with that guilt and that shame and that fear and embracing our powerful self, our true self. And here are a few ways that we can do this that I think are very, very useful, and they work. One is to accept everything about yourself without judgment, without blame, and without accusation. That means accepting your past choices, your mistakes, the times that you've hurt other people, the times you've hurt yourself, the times you've held yourself back from being fearful, the times you've procrastinated, anything and everything that if you thought about, and as I'm saying you, I'm talking about, I'm not addressing Linda here, I'm addressing all of us. But I'm trying to make it specific so that when people are listening, they're thinking about themselves. As you deal with all those things and heal from that and get rid of it, then your powerful self emerges naturally. It's just natural. Okay, so how do we accept ourselves? Because that's what people are wanting to do. And here's a few ways that we can develop greater self-acceptance, greater self-love, and self-worth. First of all, when we think about our life and we think about, gee, you know, I could be in a much better place had I just saved more money, or had I not married that person and then gotten a divorce, or whatever it is. If I had just gone to college and finished it, or if I had gone and gotten the MBA, you know, all the things that people beat themselves up for. Acceptance comes from knowing that all behavior has a positive intent. All behavior has a positive intent. Now, I'm not saying that all behaviors have a positive consequence or that all behaviors are always in our best interest or in the best interest of others. But all behaviors, everything we do, we did because at that time we thought that was our best choice at the time. We thought that was what we needed to do or what we were able to do, so that's why I say that it has a positive intent. There is absolutely no need to ever beat ourselves up for a past choice or for a failure to do something, because the fact of the matter is, at that time, we did the best we could. Now,
yes.
here's what people always tell me when I tell them, you did the best you could. They say, no, I didn't do the best I could. I could have done better, and I should have done better. So now the shoulds and the oughts come into play, and those are full of guilt and full of shame. The fact of the matter is that every person made a choice, did what they did, because at the time that was the best thing that they can do. And when someone is saying, no, I could have done better, and I should have done better, they did not get that from God. They did not get that from Spirit. They got that maybe from a parent, from a sibling, or from the culture that they grew up in. Maybe they got it from their church, but they did not get it from God. The story that we just talked about, the prodigal son, as some people call it, I think is the best example if someone wants to go to the Bible. The father didn't say, hey, yeah, I'll take you back as a servant, and maybe, you know, after you earn your trust with me back, after you prove yourself, then I'll accept you back into the family and give you more responsibility and let you share in my resources. That's not what the father said at all. That father understood that his son did the best he could, that son had a need that he was trying to fulfill. Now, did he do it in the wisest way? No. Did he do it in a way that hurt himself and I'm sure even hurt the father? Yes. But the father was saying, you did the best you could at the time and you needed that learning experience. And the fact that you're back here wanting to be with me shows me that you've learned. I don't need to set a boundary with you because I don't need to protect myself from you. So welcome back home, son. So when we really accept that everything that we've done or haven't done in our life has a positive intent and we did the best we can, then we quit beating up on ourselves with the guilt and the shame. And we develop more acceptance, more self-esteem, and more self-worth. Now, here's something that I often tell clients to do, and this will be easier to do, perhaps, than what I just talked about. Linda, I want you to, I'm not going to ask you to share any details at all, but I want you to get in your mind the name of a very good friend that you love and respect. And you're not going to tell me who it is, but just tell me when you have someone in mind.
and I do.
Okay. So let's say that I have a client sitting next to me, and let me just say that her name is Linda, so I've just asked her to do that. I would say, and she just told me something, and she's being down on herself. You know, she's saying, you know, I'm just making enough money to pay the bills, and what I really want to be doing is I want to start my own coaching business, but I'm just too afraid to, you know, tell people that that's what I'm doing, even though I went to a coach training school and now I have that certification and I think I'm ready and I think I'm qualified, but I just can't seem to get out there and let people know about it. And so she's being down on herself for not being able to do what she thinks she should be able to do. So I will say to her, I'll say, Linda, that best friend that you have in your mind, I want you to go home after our coaching session. And most of my coaching sessions are on the phone. So, you know, when we're done, I want you to imagine that you're sitting with your best friend and they've just presented the same situation to you that you presented to me. Exactly all the details of your past are her past. Everything that you've done or didn't do, that's true of her. Now, what would you say to her? How would you feel about her? How would you evaluate her? Would you be judgmental? Would you be critical? Would you say, well, yeah, you know, I can see why you're having a hard time because you're just not willing to work hard. You're not willing to do what you have to do. So that's on you. You know, that's your fault. And, of course, Linda would say, man, I would never say that because I love this person. And I believe in that person. And I respect that person. And here's the problem. It's easier for us to look at someone else and respect them and to admire them than it is us sometimes because we're looking at just the worst things about ourselves. But when we're looking at our best friend, we're looking at the big picture. And we're seeing how great they are. We're seeing how talented they are. We're seeing how loving they are. Well, we can learn to think that way about ourselves. And one way to do that is to imagine that we're coaching a best friend in exactly the same situation as ours. What would we point out to them? How would we describe how we view them and what we think about them and how we see them, their strengths, their passions, their talents? And, of course, we're really talking about ourselves because that person is just like us that we've made up in our mind. So the more someone does what I call the best friend coaching scenario, the more their subconscious begins to believe that about themselves. Another way that we can build our self-esteem and self-confidence is simply to focus on our strengths and not our weaknesses, to focus on our successes and not our failures. Now, this goes back to what I was talking about earlier. Someone says to me, well, I'm usually thinking success and abundance and prosperity and all of these wonderful things, but really they're not. What they're thinking about are their weaknesses. They're thinking about how they didn't give their business card to someone to promote their new ministry or their new business, and they're blowing it out of proportion and they're beating themselves up with it. The more that we turn away from what we didn't do and start thinking about what we did do and thinking about it and playing it over in our minds, the more we're going to remind ourselves of how much we have done, because we forget our successes. We forget our strengths. We forget what we have done, and that's devastating.
Well, so, Alan, you have been so great and helpful. You know, I want to say it always and again, I definitely need to have you come back, and I hope you will consider it, even though you've been a guest a few times. But you just have
absolutely.
Such a wellspring of knowledge that I think it's going to be helpful to a lot of people. And I don't, and you've said it, and I just want to say that Alan also is the author of an ebook. I don't know if you said it, but Mental Aikido, is that right? Rediscover
yes,
your powerful
Aikido.
Self?
Yes.
And that you're a
absolutely.
Life and a business coach, a personal coach and a personal life coach and a business coach. So, and you can see the wellspring of knowledge he has. So, Alan, tell them about a website or.
Well, thank you for asking. I appreciate that because the time did get away from me there. They can go, and I'm going to spell it out. It's my name. It's
okay.
Alan, Alan, Allard, Allard. So alanallard.com. And they can sign up for my newsletter, get a free special report that I've written. And anyone that has listened to this, if they have a question that they would like to ask about anything that we've talked about, they're free to email me or give me a call, and I'll be as helpful as I can.
And that is so great. I want to thank you again, Alan. Like I said, hopefully maybe one day soon, one day whenever you can, you'll come back and we can share with the audience. Again, you can listen to this archive or you can message me on Facebook your comments or on Blog Talk Radio, comments, concerns, questions. You know this was a wonderful show. Again, this is Soul in the City, where we inspire to take your spirit higher and higher. We're so blessed to have you had been with us and to have listened. Good night, and come back again soon. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Linda. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And goodbye to you. Again, I say, be you. Be your God self. Be your true self. Be audacious. Be bold and go for what you know. This is Linda in Soul in the City. Good night.